When I graduated valedictorian in high school and found out that I had won a full scholarship to one of the prestigious universities in my country, I was on cloud nine. My parents aren't well off, and I'm the only one to graduate high school. My two brothers, Carrie and Destin, have all chosen dark, dangerous paths. Destin is currently locked up for possession, and Carrie has bummed out of school and has joined a gang. My little sister, Erin, is already pregnant at 17. Let's just say that I'm giving hope to my family, that we aren't all defective. My dad works at a factory, but he's also a drunk, which means he can't operate heavy machinery unless he's sober. And if we're lucky, he'll be clean for 3 out of 7 days. Most of our money comes from my mother, who works as a maid for a rich family. She travels 2 hours by bus every day just to make sure that she keeps the lights on in the house. And now that I'm no longer there, it's one less mouth to feed. Thank God. This is all the reason why I'm doing this, so I can help her retire early and give her the lifestyle she deserves. Growing up hadn't been easy. We barely had food on the table and clothes on our backs. Going to school had been hell with the bullies. My brothers protected me, of course, but they could have done more by actually getting a real life. Seeing how my brothers have chosen different paths and how my dad has never really contributed to anything substantial in our lives makes me want to change it. I want to break the family curse. And now that Erin is pregnant, I want to make sure that her kid doesn't go through what we did. So you see, winning a full scholarship and graduating at the top of my class in high school was a big deal for me. So big that over the last 2 years, I dedicated my life to keeping my GPA above 4 and making sure that my scholarship stays solid. I don't party, I don't drink, I do not have a social life. I work on campus so I can buy clothes, whatever I need, and that's it. However, at the start of my 3rd year, everything took a turn. My professor said that I needed a hobby, that I needed to engage in something to make myself look good on paper. Basically, I have the brains but not the humanity aspect. I don't seem likable, marketable. According to my professors, I need to build skills that will help me become my full self, whatever that means. Anything outside of working and studying is a complete setback. But sadly, joining a society of some sort is now a stipulation to maintain my scholarship. I mean, joining a club isn't all that bad. It's just that it'll take away time from studying. Now I'll have to juggle work, schooling, and an extracurricular activity. In addition to that, I'm not much of a people person. I hate social gatherings and interactions. And I know I probably need that to be a great doctor, but I am planning on rectifying that after my degree. Not now. Ugh. Anyway, so I'm in my 2nd term of my 3rd year, and after signing up for this charity event thingy, where we raise funds for sick kids and visit them at the hospitals and other stuff, the group has decided that I should be president. Why? I have no freaking clue. I just started, and now they want me to run the damn thing. No worries. As usual, I'll become the best there is, and it'll look great on my resume.
You should definitely take part in the event.
Jessica, my new friend and secretary to the SCAPC Foundation, says.
It'll be nice for the bidders to see a new pretty face.
No thanks. I think I'm gonna pass on that. Besides, I'm the president. I should be doing presidential stuff behind the scenes.
Jessica sighs out loud.
Every year we get the same people, and if we are lucky, the freshies to volunteer. But with your presence alone, we may have a fighting chance.
I roll my eyes.
I know you're just saying that to butter me up, Jess.
Well, I believe I'm pretty, but to say that I'll have the guys fighting to bid for a date with me is an overstatement.
No, I'm not. I bet you used to get all the guys in high school.
I shake my head.
No, actually, it was the opposite of that. I was the geek, the nerd, the one who cared for nothing more than her grades.
Jessica touches one of my loose black curls. Curls I've inherited from my father's lineage. I'm the only one to come out with curly black hair. My brother and sister's own are straight as a pin. It's also the reason why they call me the black sheep. Back when I was small, and my dad had it together, he said his grandmother had curly hair and that I was probably her reincarnation because I looked just like her.
Well, you certainly don't look like that now.
I look regular, like plain Jane.
We'll see about that, Miss World.
I narrow my eyes.
I am not going to be a model for the charity, Jess. I have other things to do.
Jessica waves her hand in dismissal.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
We are a day away from the event, and lots of people have signed up. Mostly boys, but that's okay. Maybe if we can get 5 more girls, then we can be even. And ever since our last conversation, Jessica has been in my ear about signing on to be a participant. The last thing I want is for anyone to throw judgment on me. I don't want to lose sales because no one knows who I am or thinks I'm not popular enough.
Ugh, we are short on girls.
Sarah, the head of the marketing team, grumbles.
There are so many guys out there waiting to bid, and we have more men than women.
I take a peek through the backstage curtains, and she is right. More guys are sitting in the auditorium.
I guess we are going to have to triple up. We'll have to send the same girls out hoping they can score some more bids. And maybe Jessica and I can go.
Currently, Jessica is on stage as the MC hyping up the crowd. She's good at that. Damn good. Sarah walks off and disappears in front of the curtain. She's on stage with Jessica. I dart around the side and stop at the front of the stage just to get a peek at what's going on. Sarah is whispering in Jessica's ear. A large grin fills Jess's face.
Great news, guys, she announces. We've got 2 additional ladies for you to bid on.
The crowd cheers and hoots.
We have our lovely Sarah here.
I smile when Sarah struts about the stage and turns around as if she's wearing a gown. It doesn't take long for the bids to get heated for Sarah. She's already at $600. Jesus, now she's at $800.
Sold, at $950.
Jessica bangs the gavel on the podium and then clears her throat.
Don't forget, everyone, 70% of our proceeds go to children in need and the rest to the club.
I smile when Sarah takes a final bow and struts off the stage. I move to return to the back when Jessica says,
And now we have a special guest contestant. She is the president of the SCAPC Foundation and also a great organizer. Had it not been for her, this event would not be what it is right now.
I pause, eyeing Jessica on the stage. What the heck is she doing? I want to make eye contact with her, but she's avoiding me at every turn.
Please welcome our next contestant on the stage, April Francis.
Jessica and the students clap, but I haven't moved an inch.
Come on, April, don't be shy.
I'm gonna kill her. I plaster a smile on my face, albeit fake and stretched, and foot it up the stairs at the side. Was this part of Sarah's plan? I bet. I fucking bet. The last thing I need is attention. I didn't sign up for any of this. What if no one bids for me? God, I'll die of embarrassment. I'll quit. Yes, I'll quit the foundation. My professor will have to understand. Jessica grabs my clipboard and shoves me to the center of the stage. God. Why are the lights so bright? I can barely see the crowd. What am I supposed to do?
Right, so this is April, our lovely president, and we'll be starting at $20.
I stand with my hands tucked in front of me and smile some more. This is so embarrassing. 2 people raised their cards and now I'm up to 100. I feel like cattle. Maybe this bidding thing is a bad idea.
Do I hear 200?
Another card is raised.
Remember,
Jessica says,
a win will get you a date with your prize, and the highest bidder for the night will have the honor of 2 dates.
She glances down at her paper.
Right now, that prize goes to Ebron Delcott at $1,500.
300.
Someone shouts. 300? I tilt my head to see a brunette guy wearing a polo t-shirt lifting his card. I mean, he isn't that bad. And when I think this will be over sooner than I can blink, the bids get competitive. Like, what the fuck? Jessica glances at me and tells me to move about.
We got 500, 500, 6, 650.
I strut across the stage like all of this is effortless, but in reality, my heart is beating fast. Why are they still bidding?
1,200.
The brunette guy yells again. The crowd whispers. Now it's a clear rivalry between him and another guy. And then there's the captain of the football team. I should feel good because three handsome, popular guys are fighting to go on a date with me. But honestly, I'm terrified of this. I've never really dated anyone, much less go out alone with a guy. Good God, now it's up to 2,000. Who has this kind of money? There's loud chatter in the crowd and a little bit of unrest.
$10,000.
Everyone grows silent when placard number 44 raises. I can barely see with the bright white lights and how dark the auditorium is. Plus, the person is sitting in the back.
$10,000?
Whispers fill the room.
Going once, twice, sold!
Jessica bangs her gavel.
Two dates and a hefty donation to our foundation. Number 44, we thank you.
I swallow hard.
Give it up to our president, April, for scoring our highest bidder.
The students applaud, but all I hear is ringing in my ears. 10 grand? Who would pay $10,000 for me? Jessica stands next to me and then hugs me.
Take a bow,
she says through gritted teeth. I bow, still in awe.
Now, we call onto stage our second-to-last contestant, Haley Gregg.
I exit the stage, but it's like my soul is still there. Sarah collides with me, squeezing me into a hug.
$10,000? Whoa, that is the most we ever made in 3 years. Damn. Do you know who it is?
I shake my head.
You will never guess.
I blink at her.
Reed McIntyre.
My heart skips a beat and a lump forms in my throat.
Reed?
Who would have guessed? He is like a ghost at this school. Marie said he bought the last placard 20 minutes ago.
I blink again. Tell me I'm dreaming. This cannot be. Sarah rubs my shoulder.
Good luck, chick.
Jessica hands me an envelope.
What's this?
An incentive.
For?
The work we've done.
You should be dead, Jess. I should have killed you yesterday for putting me on the spot like that.
She laughs.
Thanks to you, we've got a lot to donate.
I roll my eyes and then peek at the envelope. There's cash inside.
What is the money for?
As I said, incentive.
I thought we were putting it into the foundation's account.
We are, just 10%.
I lift a brow. She sighs.
According to our foundation's rulebook, 70% for charity, 20% for the accounts, and 10% for us. We pool everything and divide it equally.
Oh.
Yes, it's not much, but it's still something.
I smile.
Thanks.
Now, about that date.
I roll my eyes.
What about it?
So since everyone has already paid in full, including Reed, I just want to say that he has already asked for you.
Ugh. Jessica narrows her eyes.
What?
Nothing.
Expect a call.
Fine.
And don't forget, it's two dates. See ya, darling.
Later that evening, after I finished at the library, I'd gotten a call from Reed. He wanted to meet with me for 6 to discuss our date. I didn't know what there was to discuss. It's just to choose a place, and we show up. I'm already frazzled about all of this. I don't do dates. I don't do socializing. I get a text from him saying to meet him outside my apartment. I head downstairs, and there he is, dressed in a leather black kit, on a motorbike. I raise a brow at him because if he thinks that I will go out with him on the back of his motorbike like some floozy, he should think again. I didn't get all this way in life to die by a motorbike. I fold my arms, stopping in front of him.
Yes?
He searches in his jacket and pulls out 4 pieces of paper. Reed holds them out.
Pick one.
I eye him.
It determines our date.
I choose the one on the end and open it.
Well?
It says pizza at Luciano's.
Great. Is tomorrow good?
I scratch my neck.
I guess.
The quicker I get this over with, the better.
It'll have to be in the evening, like 7. I have my studies and I have an assignment thing.
No worries. Do your thing. I guess I'll see you at 7. I'll pick you up.
I don't do...
It won't be a bike.
Okay.
Reed revs his bike and speeds off. Is he not going to acknowledge the fact that we know each other? Or does he already think I'm fine with everything and pretend that everything is okay? I sigh out loud. One thing I know about life is that it's unpredictable as fuck. So unpredictable that I never in my lifetime thought I would cross paths with Reed McIntyre ever again. Back in middle school, I was the nerd, the geek. And as I said before, bullies loved me. They also loved Reed McIntyre. Since I've known him, he has always been a loner. He would wear these super thick glasses that magnify his eyes. Even though he probably wears contacts now, his gray eyes are still a bit huge from before. Huge, but cute. I remember the day two bullies ganged up on him, punching him out. When the teachers showed up, the guys ran away, leaving Reed on the floor, coughing and clutching his stomach. His glasses had been thrown across the hallway. I knew because it landed in front of me. I waited until he was alone outside the principal office to return his glasses. I even cleaned it. He never said thanks. He never even looked at me. Just took the glasses and ignored me. The next day, I heard that his parents had taken him out of school. No one knew what happened after that. However, in my second year at uni, I spotted him in one of my classes. It had been the first time since we were 13 I saw him. Reed looked nothing like himself. His hair had turned from straight blonde to a dirty mix of gold and brown. He wore hoodies to classes and never spoke to anyone unless needed. So for him to bid such a large amount on me for two dates, I'm not sure what to think of it. And where would he find that kind of cash? Is he a drug dealer? A criminal? Whatever he is, I just want the two dates to pass quickly. It's 7:10, and Reed is already outside my apartment waiting. I put on my shoes and head downstairs thinking he's going to show up with his bike or something weird, but I'm blown away by his ride. What the hell? Reed McIntyre is driving a Porsche. A yellow Porsche. Now I'm intrigued. Is he rich? If he is, then it would make sense why he never stays on campus and why he vanished without a trace back in high school. He exits the car wearing a black hoodie and matching sweatpants. Now I feel overdressed with my green milkmaid dress. Usually I wear jeans and an oversized t-shirt because it's comfortable. But I figured since it's a date and it may never happen again for a long time, I'm thinking, why not? But now I should have stuck to the jeans and a jersey. Reed opens my door and smiles.
You look pretty.
Thanks, but I feel overdressed.
Never.
I give him a small smile and hop in.
Nice, car.
Thanks. It was a university gift.
Oh.
The rest of the ride remains silent, and it's really awkward. What am I supposed to say? We literally don't have anything in common. But the silence isn't bad. It's just weird. We arrive at the pizza place in 5 minutes, and I feel like we should have walked or something. Pulling up with a Porsche is a bit over the top, and I don't know why, but my nerves are jumping. People are staring at us, making me feel absolutely naked. Reed takes my hand and leads me into the restaurant. I don't know why, but having him take control like that makes me feel safe. Like he cares. But I know my feelings are pointless because Reed McIntyre is a stranger to me. After the waiter seats us at a corner booth away from everyone, it doesn't take long for Reed and me to order our meals. A little over 2 hours later, we are stuffed, but I must say that the Luciano's pizza date was way more than I expected. It was nice. As we head back to the car, all I can think about is how a guy like him can go misunderstood and unseen. In 2 hours, I learned that his family is wealthy with a capital W. His father is the heir to a major airline company, and he would be too. When Reed left high school, his parents had him homeschooled because of the excessive bullying. And despite pleading with his parents to return to public schooling for some exposure, they had shut him out completely, not even considering private schooling. They had said it was to protect him. Protection had turned into isolation and then resentment. Somehow I felt bad for him, but I understood why his parents did what they did. Reed had sustained a lot of bruises because of that fight, so his parents wanting to protect him is plausible. Reed pulls up in front of my apartment complex and puts the car in neutral.
I just want to say that I enjoyed our date,
he says.
Me too. It was good. The pizza was delicious, and it was nice getting to know you.
I loosen my seatbelt, and Reed taps his fingers on the steering wheel, then faces me with a constipated look.
If you're wondering about the next date?
No,
What's up?
I know you're probably wondering why I paid such a lot of money just to go on two dates with you.
Yes, I am interested. $10,000 is quite a lot.
Aside from you being one of the prettiest girls on campus?
I roll my eyes at him.
Maybe you need to get those contacts checked.
He laughs.
Speaking of contacts, it's actually about that.
I peer at him.
I don't think I ever got to say thanks for fetching my glasses off the floor back when we were in high school. Everything had been chaotic with me. Never coming back and all.
Oh.
I've been trying to find a way for a long time without coming off as creepy, and then I heard about this charity thing. I was glad to see you as one of the contestants. I literally bought the last placard.
To think that he was trying to get my attention all this time is wild. Reed McIntyre interested in me?
Yeah, I heard about that.
I just thought that contributing to the foundation and getting to go on a few dates with you was more than enough. It was a combo, really.
What? Why?
Because I never expected to ever get a date with you.
Me?
He nods.
Before yesterday, I couldn't even fathom getting a date with you, April. It's like you're in your own world. I mean, I can be like that most times, but you don't do anything besides work and study.
That's because I have a goal. I have a plan in mind, and I need to stick to it.
You are young. You should enjoy it and live a little.
That's easy for you to say. You don't have to worry about money a day in your life. I have my family to take care of. I need to become the best I can be so I can live like you.
I don't even think I should be explaining any of this to him because this is none of his business. What I decide to do with my life at my leisure is up to me. And how dare he question my social life when he isn't even living on campus?
Anyway, I've got to go. I have to get up early in the morning for class.
But tomorrow is Saturday.
It's, an additional thing.
I lie. I'm just going to the library. Reed nods and gives me a small smile.
All right.
I pull on the door handle, and just when I open it, he stops me.
Wait,
You can always text me about the second date.
Oh, okay, cool.
I exit the car and wait at the main entrance until he disappears down the street. I exhale a choppy breath. Reed McIntyre is hot. He is straight out of the ugly duckling storybook. And now, he might just be the guy I would date when I get my life together. But right now, I can't even think about that. The last thing I need right now is a distraction, and Reed McIntyre is an entire disco ball.
You have met the end of The Highest Bidder, Part 1. Stay tuned for Part 2. Bye.